Well, we do have Mark Hammergren. Hammergren, am I saying that right, Mark? Am I anywhere close?
Yes, indeed. Hammergren.
Hammergren.
You can't touch this.
Yep. Hey, that's a great name. Did you appreciate that name growing up?
I did. Not growing up. Later.
Yeah.
I'm not that young.
Oh, okay. Did they call you the Hammer when you were in school? Or
oh, my gosh. Yeah. I was Hammer all through grad school.
That's great. You're the lead Adler scientist, and we appreciate you stopping on by here. I got to tell you, Mark, I've been to the planetarium many times, and I always enjoy my visits there.
Wonderful.
And, but, you know, I've always been inspired by the Apollo program and known everything about the space program. But for some reason, until this summer, when I was up in northwestern Ontario, and we've gone there many times, and I've taken a look at our vast stars and how gorgeous they are, especially without any light pollution. But this past month, I was able to go up to Waupaca, Wisconsin, which is right in the middle of Wisconsin, and you still get an amazing view. And I downloaded this app that I could kind of point in the direction of stars, and it would give me information on the stars. And I got to tell you, knowledge is power. Knowledge is inspiration. I found myself just amazed at what I was looking at because I actually could look at and read a little bit about what I was looking at. I imagine that's something that you're saying. You're probably nodding your head like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Just a little bit of knowledge about what you're looking at just opens your horizons.
Mm-hmm.
Just really brings the immensity of what you're viewing down to your heart. Yeah.
I couldn't even believe I was watching. I was looking at this one star, and it was kind of like pulsing red, and I'm like, what is that? And there it is, the heart of the scorpion, and I'm learning about how far away these things are. And I know, and I'm sure some listeners right now are just rolling their eyes, but I could not believe that some of these stars are hundreds of light years away, meaning that we are seeing what the light they sent 400, 500 years ago. Some of these stars may have burned out. We don't even know about it yet.
Well, in theory, the ages of stars are so long. Like our own sun will last for another 5 billion years.
Mm.
So you hear about, you know, these stars that you look at might be burned out already. Actually, most of the stars you see are only a few thousand light years away. Only.
That's insane, though.
Yeah. So most of the ones that you see are still going strong, good. Going bright.
Good. I don't want them to disappear one night. I just learned what their darn names were.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk about this fascinating story I read in the Tribune about a meteorite at the bottom of Lake Michigan. First of all, I got a question, because we were seeing kind of shooting stars. We were there late July, which I guess was a good time to see that sort of thing in the northern sky. How often when we see a meteor or we see streaks of it or someone gets a cell phone video of it or something like that, how often do these things actually come and make contact with either the ground or our lakes or oceans?
Yeah, not that often. That's why this kind of thing is special. So probably only a couple dozen times a year, a few dozen times a year, are meteors large enough that they can survive all the way down to the ground, that they don't burn up completely. The normal ones that you see are really small, maybe the size of a penny, even smaller than that. Yeah. And this one, oh gosh, was probably several feet across, probably massing several tons, and it broke up, as they usually do along the way, and fell in a scatter of meteorites into Lake Michigan.
Is it a matter that it's simply a mathematical equation, meaning it has to be X big to be able to survive that reentry? It is essentially size matters at that point.
Size does matter. There are a couple other things, like how strong the material is.
Okay.
Like if it's an iron meteorite, it's likely to hold together more strongly than a stony meteorite.
Mm.
What they're made of. There are a lot of parameters. How fast they're going. The faster they go, the more they break up, and the more they burn up. Yeah.
So a slow iron one that's big is going to do better. Get a better chance to come on down to Earth. Now that I'm happy to know that it doesn't happen too often. I mean, I imagine scientists wish it happened more often so they could explore these things more. It just puts me in a little bit more ease of mind as I'm walking around the area at night or during the day, I should say. But what do we know about this one that has landed in Lake Michigan, or do we not know a lot? Is that why we're going to get it?
Yeah, exactly. We don't know too much. We know its orbit. So I was able to use some videos that were taken of the meteorite coming in and track it from a couple different points of view. And that allowed me to do a 3D reconstruction of its motion, of its and pass it all the way back into space to get its orbit. So we know where it came from in space, which is about two-thirds of the way out into the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. So
what sent it on its, do we have no idea what would send it on its journey towards us? Was it kind of just stagnant in space, or has it always been on this journey, and that's the point at which we pick it up?
Yeah, it's probably been on that orbit for thousands, if not millions of years.
Jeez,
before we happened to be in the, well, the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. So what does meteorite hunting look like? I mean, do you have an idea that this thing is certainly down there? Do we know? Do we have some sort of sonar confirmation? How did you guys find it?
Yeah, so we haven't found it yet, but we know it's down there because it was picked up by weather radar. So the National Weather Service, you know how they can pick up hailstones and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
They actually picked up stones falling through the sky. And we have recordings, we have pings from the radar all the way down to about 7,000 feet above the ground. So we know really well where these things fell. We know for sure there were a lot of stones, and they came down in the lake within about a half mile. Mm-hmm. We know where it was.
And that seems pretty precise to me, but it's not like you can just suck the water up and look and scan over that half mile and go, oh, yeah, there it is. We're talking about what depth?
Yeah, about 200 feet of water.
Okay,
there's deeper divers.
But that is deep, but there are deeper places in Lake Michigan, so you lucked out there.
We did.
So how are you going to go get this thing?
Well, we thought about a couple different things. First thought was we could send down a remotely operated vehicle and look for these things. But honestly, despite there being probably a couple hundred pounds of stones, most of them are small, and they're going to be scattered few and far between. So what we came up with is this idea of having a magnetic sled that we drag behind a boat. So most meteorites, the vast majority, have some iron in them, little tiny bits, usually for the stony ones. But they're still attracted to magnets, and if we dragged this magnetic sled over the bottom, we could pick these things up. We just have to cover enough area to do that.
Does this device exist? Did it have to be built?
It did. So the design and testing and building was done by teen volunteers who came to the Adler. Yeah. So this was a project really driven entirely by the teenagers who work for us. Well, not work for us, volunteer for us.
Right. They don't get paid, or at least maybe some credit or something like that. But experience is paid in experience, of course, Mark. Okay, so you build this. Now, I got to ask you, because you obviously know a lot about space. Do you know much about the floor of the lake? I mean, are you working, I imagine, with experts who know a lot about the more marine aspects of what's happening?
Absolutely. So we're working with folks from the Shedd Aquarium. Philip Willink used to work
there. Oh, that's good. That's not too long of a walk. You could just walk back and forth and figure this thing out.
You'd think we would have worked before on this kind of thing, but this is the first time we've worked with the Shedd Aquarium and the Field Museum all on one project. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that we didn't know was what was the lake bottom like around these places we were going to search. And it was completely surprising to everybody, especially the marine biologists, that the entire bed of Lake Michigan in that area is carpeted with quagga mussels.
Whoa.
With mussels, yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So there's just meteorite stones in between these things now, or nestled on top of them. And so this magnet thing that's going to be dragged across, are you going to do it like a lawnmower, where you just got to go back and forth and canvas the entire area?
Pretty much as much as we can, yeah.
And what do you learn from it? So you get these things to the surface, you're able to see little bits of it or bigger chunks. What sorts of things can we learn about our solar system or the great beyond in space from gathering this material?
Oh, meteorites are wonderful. They're kind of like nature's own sample return missions. They are pieces of asteroids, which are the original building blocks of our solar system. So with all of the planets, including the Earth, were made of this kind of material. But the only place we can find them is in the asteroids or the meteorites that they drop on us. So this gives us insight into our very origins. Now, when we can connect that to an orbit, we can get some idea of where they came from in the asteroid belt.
That's fascinating stuff. So wait, I am already confused now. What's the difference between an asteroid and a meteorite?
Well, it's a matter of coincidence, I guess. Meteorites mean that these are chunks of asteroids, for the most part, that have hit the Earth. So they come through the air. They're seen as meteors. That's the streak of light. And when they hit the ground, they're called meteorites.
Do you get excited when you hear about any time? Because you see these videos now and again, cell phone videos or police dash cam videos. Does that excite you? Do you have like a Google alert set for any of those things that alerts you when another one shoots across the sky?
I wish I had a Google alert for that, but I absolutely do get excited by that, especially when something comes down in kind of our neighborhood, mm-hmm. like Michigan about a year or so ago. And Wisconsin, well, there was one maybe 5-6 years ago that came down in the southwestern part of Wisconsin.
Mark, what's your background? How long have you been interested in what's above us?
No, I've been interested in this since I was a kid. I really got interested by the Apollo missions. I'm old enough that I saw astronauts walk on the moon, and that had me thinking, man, I want to work for NASA when I grow up.
Uh-huh.
And I stuck with it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Adler Planetarium, of course, a great place to visit. You have all sorts of events. I imagine, you know, believe it or not, you know, I grew up in the area. I grew up in Downers Grove, so I'm sure we did field trips to the planetarium. And you learn to sort of, unfortunately, take these things for granted that we have them in our own backyard. Tourists, of course, flock to it because it's on TripAdvisor or whatever it may be. But I encourage everyone out there to be a tourist in your own town. I imagine there's listeners that have never been to the Adler Planetarium. Not that you have to make the pitch, Mark, but why should people come on by?
Oh, my gosh. Well, for one reason, you can come down here and you can actually talk to real astronomers. We're up on the floor and we're happy to share what we're researching on. So there's actual research going on here at the Adler. This is not just, not just playtime.
Right. Not just relics or not just things to look at.
No.
I mean, there's actual scientific developments occurring.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And historians who are researching the origins of these various artifacts that we have, these ancient, historic telescopes, other artifacts. So we have a lot going on here behind the scenes.
If there was one thing that you don't know that you wish you could figure out or find out in the next 10, 15 years or so, a question that has just been bugging you, something about the space, what would it be that you could have answered? If you need more time, I could take a quick commercial break. I know that's a loaded question.
That's easy. Is there life off of the planet Earth? Is there life out there somewhere?
You know, I've been fascinated by that lately, too, and I don't know if you're familiar with space.com. There's a gentleman by the name of Mike Wall who writes for them and does great work, and they've got a lot of great articles. And we talk about that sometimes here on this program, about life out there and how, you know, generally, most people seem to think that, you know, why not? There should be a vast, you know, universe out there with a lot of different planets roaming around that are very similar to Earth, have the similar things. But I find it fascinating, Mark, not only wondering if there's life out there, but what the heck sort of form has it taken?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the biggest unknown. We usually start with life as we know it, life like the stuff we find here on Earth. And it's the most common things are bacteria or just microscopic organisms. So that's kind of what we have to look for if we're going to look for life out there.
Do you think there's other, like multicellular organisms out there, and I don't want to say mammals or reptiles because they could be anything. Do you think there's bigger things out there that we don't know about?
Space is so vast. There are about 500 billion stars in our galaxy, and there are trillions of galaxies out there. So the numbers are definitely in the favor of something else having arisen. Can we really be the only place in this vast universe that has life? No, I don't think so.
I agree with you there. Let's talk about, really quickly before I let you go, I'm fascinated by this conversation, Rocktoberfest, Adler After Dark. What's going on? I see the logo, and it's a bunch of beer bottles turned upside down and shooting off to space like they're the Saturn V rocket. That got me intrigued.
Yeah, so First of all, Adler After Dark is a great monthly activity that we have here for adults at Adler. And Rocktoberfest, or Rocktoberfest, is we're going to have, it's like our Oktoberfest. We're going to have some brews from Empirical Brewery and Martz Brewing, and Dunkhouse, that's the German celebration. They're gonna be here. There's going to be a Oompa band.
Yeah, there's no other way to describe a German band than that. I'm glad you didn't go for the official name, but the Oompa works fine for me. And I imagine there's conversations like this one that people can have with willing participants on the other end.
Absolutely, yeah. No, these are great times, yeah. And it's an adults only kind of thing, so it's a great date night. My, oh.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of fun. And that is on September 19th, part of the Adler After Dark program, Rocktoberfest, or Rocktober. I don't know quite how to pronounce it, but it's Rocket and Oktoberfest combined. You can do the rest. Mark, thank you so much, and best of luck. What are you gonna? Can you call in and let us know when you guys get this thing on up and what you're going to do with it next?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I guess I forgot to ask, are you out there now? Are you on the boat doing this? When is this happening?
No. We only have a few expeditions each year. We've had a few this summer, and we're still looking through the magnetic sediments that we collected. So the work, well, is not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll absolutely let you know if we find anything.
Yeah, we want to be your first call. None of your relatives or friends. 312-91-7200. You let us know, Mark. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.